I have my suspicions.
You do?
Hi, I'm Malachi, and you're listening to the Judge a Book podcast. Downloads and reviews help us out a ton, so leave us 5 stars before you go. Every single week, join in for our book club where we talk about the books that we love or maybe not so loved. New books will be chosen every month, and you'll get to listen to exactly how we judge a book. Well, it is January, and it's time for a new book club. So, if you listened to the last episode of the Inheritance Games podcast, you know that we're starting off with Aragon. So, if you have not read Aragon yet, please pause the podcast. We are reading up to page 123, which happens to be the chapter Thunder, Roar, and Lightning Crackle, if your pages are a little bit different in your book. Read to up into that chapter and stop there, then come back and listen to the podcast because we have lots to talk about. My new guest this month is Christian. Hi, Christian.
Hi, Malachi.
Christian is actually my husband, guys. I got him to do this month's podcast with me. It took a little bit of work because most of the time we read different genres, but we settled on Aragon. It's a book that's been on my TBR for a long time, and I think it's been on Christian's for a long time.
For a very long time.
For a long time. So we are looking forward to discussing it with you guys because we've finished week one's reading, and we're ready to chat.
I'm so excited.
So, Christian, if you want to do a quick introduction of yourself, now's the time.
All right. Well, I am Malachi's husband, first and foremost. I'm a software engineer for a space systems company, and I own a bookstore and coffee shop with Malachi.
So if you're new to the podcast, my name is Malachi. I would love to connect with you on social media and get to know you there. I love to talk about books, so let me know that you're from the podcast and we can chat about some books. This week's episode of the Judge a Book podcast is brought to you in part by Wink. Wink is a wine subscription service that delivers wine straight to your door. Use the referral code in my podcast description to get $22 off of your first box of wine. All right, we're going to get right into things. So, Aragon. So before we kind of get into the depth of this book, I just kind of want to talk about a few things. So first of all, what do you think of the cover of Aragon?
I think it looks really awesome. You've got the dragon on the front. I'm not sure if this is the original cover or not, but it looks awesome. You've got a giant dragon on the front. For anyone that's into fantasy, that's just like, you know, that's right up my alley. I see the dragon on the front and I just get excited. I'm ready to dive into a new high fantasy universe.
Yes, I agree. I think the cover's really simplistic, but at the same time, like, really intriguing. I am not a huge high fantasy reader. This is probably one of the first high fantasy that I've read, but it was very intriguing. I will say the font that Aragon is written in is on our cover. I don't know what all the other covers look like, but specifically on our cover, the font of Aragon, there's like a little dot in the middle of the O, and it's super intriguing to me. I don't know if it's something's going to come of it or if it's just like stylistically, like the font, they wanted to make it look interesting, but that part is definitely intriguing for me. And there on the spine of our cover has an eye, and it's the dragon's eye, but it's just when it's sitting on your shelf, it's like, read me, read me. It just feels like it's staring into my soul.
I think the art for the dragon itself is kind of interesting. You know, I feel like everyone has their own idea of what a dragon looks like in their head, and all different fantasy series, movies, they all kind of portray dragons in a somewhat different sense. So it's really interesting that they chose to put the dragon on the cover and just kind of give us their take on what a dragon looks like in their universe.
That's so true. I typically don't like when there are people on the front cover of books because I like my own mind to imagine what that person looks like. So I kind of feel the same way about the dragon. I feel like I almost want to imagine it in my own mind, but at the same time, just the way that they have portrayed this dragon on the cover is, I don't know, it's so interesting and it really does give you a good picture and something that you can reference back to while reading through the book.
And what's strange is that for me, I feel like I, despite the cover, I still come up with my own version of the dragon in my head.
Yeah, I
feel like
I do too.
I have my own my own version of the dragon in my head that's different from the cover.
Obviously, we like it. If you have a different cover, I'd love to know what it looks like. You can DM me or message me. I'm going to look up some other covers because I would be really interested to see what the cover looks like, what cover you have, or what they look like in other countries. Because UK covers, I'm always obsessed with. So if you're from the UK and reading and listening right now, I want to see what Aragorn looks like in your country. Have you read anything by this author before?
No, Aragorn will be my first book by Christopher Paolini.
It is my first book as well. I think one of our mutual friends, Kaylee, is reading his new book that just came out. I don't remember what it's called. Something about all the stars. Ooh, I'll have to look it up, but I think it's a sci-fi book this time.
Oh, that is really interesting.
Yeah, and I think Kaylee's really into sci-fi. Yeah, we're reading Aragorn, she's reading sci-fi. What a cool friend group we have. But I've not read anything by this author either, but I just think it's so interesting. We've talked about this before, but I think he wrote this book at like age 15 or 16.
Right, yeah. He was 15 or 16 when he started writing Aragorn, I believe. And I believe he self-published in high school and actually landed a publishing deal when he turned 18.
Which is insane because it's a number one New York Times bestseller. And so to start from self-publishing and land where he did today, starting at age 15 or 16, it's just incredible.
It's very inspiring.
So is this your typical read? I know we just talked about this kind of a little bit ago, but is this your typical read or is it outside of your normal genre?
This is definitely my typical read. Fantasy is probably my favorite genre. Sci-fi is pretty high up there as well. And I feel like people that enjoy fantasy tend to like sci-fi. Sci-fi and fantasy kind of go together. So yeah, this is a very typical read for me. And I've actually been looking forward to this one for a very long time.
I would say that it's somewhat out of my typical realm of reads. I have recently gotten to fantasy. I used to say I was not a fan of fantasy, but if you look at my Goodreads and see the books that I've recently read, you would call me a liar because I've been majorly into fantasy lately. And I also read a ton of YA, which this fits into the YA genre, but I don't read a lot of high fantasy. I read a lot that's kind of tied into our real world, and this one is not. And so, I mean, you can't get much more high fantasy than a dragon. So right? Here we are.
Yeah, that's very much not a real life thing.
Yeah. Okay, so I am going to kind of go over what we read in this past week. So for week one's reading, like I said, we read to Thunder Roar and Lightning Crackle. And so I'm just going to kind of go over what we read and then we'll discuss it a little bit.
The prologue.
So in the prologue, we see a shade who is hunting down an elven woman. And this woman has a sapphire stone, mm-hmm. And this shade wants it. And I will be honest, I didn't know what a shade was before this read. And so I'm definitely getting introduced to a lot of new characters. But this shade is hunting down this elven woman who has this stone. And instead of surrendering, she makes the stone vanish. It disappears. And that's kind of the gist of what happens in the prologue. We just kind of get this separate scene, separate from what we're going to find in the next few chapters. Just kind of like a cutscene, almost.
Like, it is a lot like a cutscene.
It's just a different part of the world that we're seeing what's going on, but we're introduced to the stone, we're introduced to the shade, the elven woman, so we know it's set in a high fantasy world right off the bat.
We're also introduced to Urgles.
Yes.
Which are like a brutish kind of creature with, I think it describes them with stocky arms and legs and horns, I believe.
Mm-hmm. And they're with the shade, is that correct?
Yes, right.
Yes, so they're also against this elven woman.
Mm-hmm. So the basic setup is you have the shade and the Urgles setting up an ambush for the elves as they're moving through the woods with the stone.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of this prologue, we see the stone is vanished. He ties up the elven woman and they're off. And that's really all we get in the prologue. And then at chapter one, we meet Aragorn, yeah. Which I've talked to Christian about this before, but I've always, always, always thought the dragon was Aragorn. I have always thought the dragon's name was Aragorn. And so when I first started reading, I was shocked.
That's so funny.
I did not expect Aragorn to be the human boy. So we meet Aragorn. Aragorn is 15 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
He is 6 months, quote unquote, from maturity.
Adulthood.
Yeah, adulthood. So he'll be an adult at 16 in this land. And which I think is funny because Christopher Paolini is 15 or 16 when he's writing this. Yeah. So I just think it's funny.
He's basically implying that he's an adult.
Yes, he is. And I'm wondering if when he's writing, he's picturing himself as Aragorn. I'll have to do some more research, but I feel like he has to. He's writing a young boy at his age going through this dragon world. So
has to be very relatable.
Yes, for sure. So we meet Aragorn. He is out hunting in the Spine, which I've pictured as kind of like a foresty, secluded area. And he's hunting for his family. He's been tracking this set of deer for quite some time.
3 days, I believe.
3 days. And there's one deer who's weak in the back of the pack, the back of the herd.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a group of deer is called.
Me either. We can go with herd.
A pack or herd. And he's just about to finally kill this deer. He has his bow and arrow. He's ready to shoot.
Notched. He's got it. He's got the bow drawn.
Yeah, he's ready to go when an explosion happens. He loses his best arrow, and deer run off, and there is the Sapphire Stone, which we saw in the prologue. And
a really interesting thing that Malachi pointed out is that in my mind, at this point when I'm reading the book, I imagine like the scene cuts from the elven woman causing the stone to vanish, and immediately it explodes in front of Aragorn. But you kind of thought differently, didn't you, Malachi?
Yeah, in my mind, the prologue was set in a different time period. I was thinking that this is in the past, and now we're jumping to the present moment, and I'm not lining up that these explosions are happening at the same time. So.
And there's no real proof that they do line up at the same time. Mm-hmm. We don't know. We don't know enough about what happened.
Yeah.
Aragorn is just as surprised as we are as well.
Yes, he is. He's totally in shock. He's in this secluded area. He's by himself. He's 15 and a half. And this stone in a magical world kind of appears. And he knows it has to be some kind of magic going on. But because he didn't get the deer, he takes the stone. And he has hope that there's some kind of money and that he can barter or trade it for the goods that him and his family need.
And it's really interesting that he does choose to take the stone, given that there seems to be a real bias against magic in their culture that we see in the coming chapters.
Yes, so. Very true. So he takes the stone and he goes back to his village that he lives in, and he goes to the butcher because he needs meat. He didn't succeed when hunting, so he goes to the butcher's place. He shows him the stone. He asks if he can trade it for meat.
Sloane the Butcher.
Yes, Sloane the Butcher.
He's an interesting character in his own right.
He is. So the butcher originally agrees and says he will trade it. And then he kind of gets to asking Aragorn some questions and asks, where did you get the stone? And when he says the spine, the butcher flips a switch. He wants nothing to do with the stone. He wants nothing to do with Aragorn even, and kind of creates like a disagreement. They get in a bit of a fight, and obviously it causes some Horst, who is the blacksmith, and then
Katrina,
who is Sloane's daughter, come into the butcher shop. Katrina runs and fetches Horst. They come into the butcher shop.
They stumble on
and see this commotion happening, argument. And Horst stands up for Aragorn and says, like, you know, you already said that you were going to trade it for this. You shouldn't be making a big deal about it, but again, Sloane still wants nothing to do with it, and that's when Horst steps up and says he'll buy the meat for Aragorn. So, loads up Aragorn's pack and is going to send him on his way.
And that really just kind of sets the stage for Horst's character. I'm not sure how much, you know, it's too early to tell at this point which side characters will be more or less involved in the story, but I'm already a fan of Horst right off the bat for buying the meat for Aragorn.
Yes, and instead of just taking it, Aragorn is going to work for Horst in the coming season. So it seems like we'll kind of meet some more characters as we go along, but it seems like Aragorn's uncle, who he lives with and who he's going to go visit soon, or is heading to his house, it seems like he's instilled some good values in him and doesn't want to just take it. He only takes it because he knows he'll be able to work it off in the future.
Exactly. And it was interesting to me that Aragorn actually offers the stone to Horst, who doesn't want the stone. He is also kind of somewhat bothered to a less extent than Sloane by the fact that it came from the spine and that it seems magical by nature. For some reason, the town folk in Carvajal, where they are, they really don't like the spine. And in the prior chapter, it talks a little bit about how there are tales, right? And stories of madmen and crazy things that go on in the Spine Mountains.
Yeah, and so after we get this little exchange, Horst gives Aragorn the meat. Aragorn's heading now he's heading home, which he lives about 10 miles from the main village, right. I believe. He lives on a farm with his uncle and his cousin. His mm-hmm. aunt has passed away. His mom is out of the picture.
Yes.
As well as his dad, who is unknown to us.
Right, and it explains that his mom had left Carvajal for several years, came back while pregnant, gave birth to Aragorn, and then begged...
And named him Aragorn.
Named him Aragorn, and then begged his uncle, Garrow, to keep him.
Mm-hmm.
And then she fled. She left once as soon as Garrow agreed.
Yes, and unfortunately his aunt has passed away,
mm-hmm.
so he's just now living with the uncle,
Garrow, mm-hmm.
Garrow, and the cousin, Roran, on the farm. And he brings in the meat. His uncle's curious about how he got it.
He's kind of angry, actually.
He actually mm-hmm. is, because he feels like someone's giving him a favor, that he's begging for this.
He doesn't want charity.
Mm-hmm. And then he also shows him the stone. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yes, he does show the stone. He basically is saying, no, I didn't bring home any meat, but I do have this stone that we could potentially trade.
Yes. And then at the same time, we also see a little bit of Roran, who is interested in Katrina,
mm-hmm.
which is Sloane's daughter.
It's a little
bit
butcher.
Of a mix-up, but... So cousin's interested in Katrina. Obviously, Aragorn and Sloane aren't on the best terms, so hopefully that doesn't cause any kinks in the future, but... We see a little bit of that. After Aragorn kind of introduces the stone to his uncle, they talk about kind of the future steps. Like, what are we going to do with this? I think the uncle agrees that it's probably worth something mm-hmm. because it looks to them as if it's been carved.
Right. It's like a precious stone.
Mm-hmm, that someone took the time to really craft it is what it looks like. Because it's smooth and mm-hmm. beautiful.
And there are veins. There are like white veins mm-hmm. coursing across. It doesn't look natural. It kind of looks... Crafted.
Mm-hmm. So they decide that there is a traveling group of merchants who come through all of the villages in this world every single year. They decide to wait and see if one of those merchants is interested in purchasing the stone. And come to find out, the merchants are delayed. They are late this year, and so that kind of puts a kink in things, obviously. But they do finally arrive, and they mm-hmm. pull a merchant off to the side, and I'm going to talk to him privately, and show him this stone, and he says he agrees that it's worth something, but he doesn't know what it's worth.
Right.
He beats it with, like, a hammer and everything else, and...
Yeah, I imagine, like a full jeweler's kit that he's, you know, he's breaking out and testing the stone to figure out what it's made of.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's solid.
Well, what's really interesting is that he finds out that it's hollow.
Yes, it is hollow, which was interesting, and I think Aragorn was very shocked by mm-hmm. that discovery. The merchant says, no, he can't buy it right now. He could take it, but even then, it would be another year before he comes back and could give them money.
Right, yeah, he offers to take it and to try to sell it abroad and bring the money back.
But they do decline.
Mm-hmm.
Aragorn decides to keep the stone, and he gets back home. So while these merchants are in town, a lot of really interesting people, it seems, travel with them. So mm-hmm. they're storytellers and...
Troubadours.
Yes, troubadours and other merchants and... It seems like a whole little group of people, like a carnival.
It's almost like a
carnival
or circus is what I was thinking.
Yeah.
People are like, you know, kids are running around playing. They describe a lot of really good smells in the air from the different foods. And it seems like, I don't know, it kind of feels like the fair coming to town.
Yeah. And like I mentioned, they have storytellers, which mm-hmm. Aragorn seems to be really interested in. They do already have a village storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
But
Brom.
Yes, Brom. And Aragorn just seems to be kind of...
He's more interested in the foreign storytellers than he is
yes,
with the local.
Yes, because he's heard Brom's stories his entire life. I think it mentions Brom's lived there 15 mm-hmm. years. Aragorn's 15 and a half. So he's already heard everything Brom has to say.
Which, let's stop for a moment right there and mm-hmm. talk about how strange it is that the storyteller has been... in Carvajal for the same amount of time as Aragorn.
I didn't even think about that.
As Aragorn has been alive.
I didn't even think about it being strange, but that is odd.
Yeah. Now, this is totally, like, just, you know, off.
And that's what happens when you read
cuff.
Week by week.
Mm-hmm. This is off the cuff, but I wonder if Brom knows who Aragorn's father is.
That would be very interesting. Or knows his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really not a lot of talk about his mother.
Right.
Like, they know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of speak of her, so maybe he is familiar with her. So Aragorn feels like he knows all of Brom's stories, except for Brom pulls out a new story that Aragorn's never heard before, mm-hmm. and it's about Galbatorix. Yes, Galbatorix is the ruler of this land.
Alagazia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's the king.
Yes, and I guess his story isn't well known.
Right.
So Aragorn's hearing it for the first time, and we find out that this is actually only the second time that Brom has ever told this story to mm-hmm. anyone. And it's about how he finds a dragon hatchling and wants to gain power through it. And so in his journey, he kind of decides that he wants to be in control of the dragons and the dragon riders, and goes through and challenges all of the others, and they literally have a choice to either join him or die.
Well, and it's really sad, because he actually starts off being recruited to be a dragon rider, and he becomes a dragon rider. He convinces two of his peers to go on a reckless journey somewhere to the north where the Urgles live, and his friends end up getting slaughtered. And his dragon dies. Mm. He flies past the spine to wherever these Urgles are, and his friends die, his dragon dies, and he has this horrifying-sounding journey that takes months, where the mountains that he flew over before, he has to basically walk home, mm-hmm. Hungry, dying, and it messes with his head. It says that he starts descending into madness, mm-hmm. and after that is when he starts challenging.
We can see him go on kind of a really dark spiral and a dark path, and mm-hmm. that is where he ends up where he is today,
right.
And why there's not dragon riders anymore.
Exactly. If I remember right, he convinces one of the dragon riders to join him, and together they begin challenging the dragon riders one by mm-hmm. one and killing them. And I believe they kill all but 12. I think 12 join him plus the
yes,
one
plus
that
he... Yes, plus his. So it made 13.
The 13, I think mm-hmm. they called him the Forsworn. Is that right?
I don't remember, honestly.
I think they called him the 13, the Forsworn. And then there's a really climactic moment where one dragon rider named Vrail is actually able to challenge King Galbatorix. I guess he's the strongest of the dragon riders. And there's a mountain not too far from Carvajal called Utgard. And Galbatorix ends up tracking Vrail down there, and there's some comment made about how he I think it says that Galbatorix kicks Vrail in the fork of his legs,
mm-hmm.
so low blow to gain the upper hand, and finally kills Vrail, and from that point on, the only dragon riders left are him and his Forsworn,
and the ones that serve him, and it's mentioned that this story has only been told twice, mm-hmm. and that Brom could die, he could
right.
be killed for telling this story,
mm-hmm.
so it's not one that Galbatorix really wants anyone to know about it.
Right. So why now? Why do you think Brom chooses this moment to tell the story about Galbatorix's rise to power?
I don't know. It's really interesting because as of this point, Brom mm-hmm. really shouldn't know that Aragorn has this stone.
No. Yeah. Brom should have no idea at this point at all. And it mentions that his eyes linger on Aragorn mm-hmm. for a moment. And so I'm wondering, is he telling the story to Aragorn, or is it coincidence? Does he just choose this winter to tell the story?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I'm sure these kind of things will unfold as we continue to read.
Mm-hmm.
After we hear this story, I believe it's that same night. I mm-hmm. could be mistaken, but the stone starts making a bunch of noises.
Yes, while Aragorn's sleeping.
While he's trying to sleep, and it's rocking back and forth and
falls
making
off the
new
shelf.
Noises, and it's keeping him up all night, and mm-hmm. he's so annoyed. I think he decides to go and bury the stone.
He's
done with it.
Mm-hmm.
He's tired of it. He doesn't care. And that is when our little stone is discovered to be an egg.
A dragon egg.
A dragon egg. And we have our little baby dragon hatches out of the egg.
Brilliant and blue, right?
Yes.
Looks like blue sapphires.
Yes, it is a sapphire color, much like the stone was.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't exactly know what happens here, but Aragorn touches the dragon.
Yes.
And he ends up fainting, right?
Right. So he puts his hand on the dragon and feels a shock of energy.
Mm-hmm. And it's really not exactly clear what mm-hmm. is going on, but something happens when he touches the dragon.
He
wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he faints. He wakes up and
he has
this odd marking on his hand. And it is paralyzed. There's some paralysis there.
Right.
So it's just really interesting. That's kind of our first introduction to the dragon. But then the next morning, we have a cute little dragon. So we have this crazy scene, but then we get introduced to the dragon, and it's small. It's like the size of a house cat.
Mm-hmm.
It like cuddles up with Aragorn. Mm-hmm.
It's like wrapping its leg around the bedpost when it sleeps.
Yeah, it's super cute. It breathes a little bit of smoke, but it doesn't breathe fire. Mm-hmm. So it's just super cute.
Yeah, it is adorable, honestly, in that first scene.
Yeah.
And Aragorn takes a liking to it as well.
Yes, for sure. So we see a little bit of connection. So went from this annoying stone rocking all night to a super cute little dragon. And Aragorn decides that he's going to hide the dragon. He doesn't want to tell anyone yet.
Right. And he has a crazy moment of confrontation in his head when he's trying to figure out what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And he actually considers killing the dragon mm-hmm. for a brief moment.
He did.
And then kind of shudders at the thought. And, you know, he can't bring himself to really think about doing that. What else could he have done other than hide this dragon or kill it? Like, what? What
I could guess he could done? Have told his family, his mm-hmm. cousin and his uncle, but I think he just feared the consequences and obviously mm-hmm. already had a connection to the dragon, so didn't want anything negative to come to the dragon, to him, right. or to his family.
It's very likely, I feel like, if he did tell his family or anyone, that they would probably try to kill the dragon.
Yeah.
Because the king does not want anyone to have a dragon that is not allied with him. Mm-hmm. It's very important. He killed the other dragon riders, and now he doesn't want any dragons to really exist outside of his control.
Yeah. And then something happens that I definitely didn't expect. The dragon and Aragorn communicate through their minds.
Right.
Which I was not expecting mm-hmm. it to be able to communicate. Right. So that was very shocking to me, but very interesting. It adds an entirely new dynamic, and you really get personality now from mm-hmm. this dragon and can kind of fall in love with it as well.
I thought it was so cool that Christopher Paolini decided to enable communication between them through this mental link where they can mm-hmm. they can talk with their minds, because in a lot of fantasy, including dragons can speak like humans mm-hmm. and they're intelligent, sentient beings. So at first, when the dragon wasn't able to speak, it was strange for me, because at first it really does just seem like an animal. But slowly over time, they start to build this link mm-hmm. in their head. And I don't know. It was just really cool to me that rather than have the dragon speak out loud, he chose to have this kind of like mental telepathy link between them. I thought that was super interesting, a unique take on the lore of a dragon.
Yeah, and then going back to Aragorn hiding it, because I really kind of glanced over that. Aragorn decides to hide it in a tree mm-hmm. at first, but the dragon's growing so quickly.
Rapidly.
Yes, and
doubling every few days.
Yes, it's getting very large, which of course is to be expected, mm-hmm. except I didn't expect it so quickly, I don't think. But it starts in the tree and then gets moved again to
he has to build a shelter, like mm-hmm. a house, essentially.
Yes, and so Aragorn hides the dragon off in the land, finds out it can hunt for himself, so he's put out a little bit of peace that he's not going to have to take away from his family's mm-hmm. food to feed the dragon. And he goes into town with his cousin Rohan. And while Rohan is working with Horst, I believe, mm-hmm. Aragorn heads over to Braum, the storyteller, and asks questions. And
about dragons.
Asks all kinds of questions about dragons and the dragon riders and their names and all mm-hmm. kinds of stuff. And I feel like this is the point where Braum is a little intrigued, because Aragorn's like, oh, one of the merchants told me. And he's like, well, mm-hmm. what's the merchant's name? And Aragorn can't tell him. So,
right.
You know,
he seems to ask really specific questions, too.
He does. He does ask, don't dragons have skin like gleaming gems and mm-hmm. stuff like that? And
right.
So I feel like this is one of those, he's 15 or 16, thinks he knows everything, smarter mm-hmm. than everybody else, but in actuality, the adult in the picture kind of knows what's going on.
He's not being quite as sleuthy as he thinks he's being.
Yeah. And after we kind of speak with Braum, he leaves town and goes back to his house mm-hmm. and decides it's time to name his dragon. Mm-hmm. So he's going through the list of names that Braum gave him.
Yes, because he asked Braum for a list of names, historical dragon names.
Mm-hmm. And he's going through all these names and he's listing them all off, and the dragon's like, no, I don't like any of them. I don't like any of them. And here's another phony moment. The dragon starts saying, Aragorn, Aragorn, Aragorn. And I'm like, oh, I was right. The dragon and Aragorn are going to have the same name.
you thought the dragon was choosing Aragorn as
yes,
its name.
Yes, I
that
did.
That is so funny.
But so did Aragorn for a minute. Mm-hmm. Aragorn's like, no, you can't be named Aragorn. That's my name.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We find out that the dragon is a girl.
He's been listing boy names. Mm-hmm. The dragon doesn't want any boy names.
No, it doesn't like any of the names because
She's a girl.
She is a girl.
She needs a lady name.
And she chooses the name Saphira, mm-hmm. which is funny because her color is sapphire. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's kind of a simple name, but that's the name that she goes with and thus becomes Saphira.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to remember, too.
Yes, so. It is.
So then we learn that, am I right, that the next thing that happens, Roran says that he's going to actually be leaving for Therensford, which is, I guess, the setting that they live in. There's a valley called the Palenkar Valley, mm-hmm. and at one end is Carvajal, and at the other is Therensford. And it's a big deal that Roran's going to be leaving because they work on a farm, mm-hmm. and someone leaving... You know, that's a lot of work to make up.
Yes, and Aragorn is upset about
He's distressed.
And mm-hmm. he thinks that Garrow, his uncle, is also going to be upset about it. Mm-hmm. Because when Aragorn is mentioned wanting to do something else, working with Horst, the uncle was not happy about it. Mm-hmm. But it's because Roran wants to get married to Katrina.
Right.
And his uncle says, that's how life works. Like, mm-hmm. go ahead and leave. So Aragorn is definitely shocked.
Yeah, Roran has it. He has it worked out. He's not going leaving forever either.
And while this is happening, some strangers appear in town, which I guess is a big deal because it seems it's a small village. They really get the merchants once a year, but it seems like that's about it.
Right. They're kind of tucked away in the corner of the continent, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of traffic coming to and from.
So it's a big deal that these strangers appear and people are talking about it. Mm-hmm. And Aragorn knows that there's these strangers in town and gets worried.
They're asking. They're asking about a stone.
Yes. He hears that they're asking about the stone mm-hmm. that Aragorn had. And, of course, they ask Sloane.
The butcher.
Mm-hmm. The butcher, which Aragorn's not on friendly terms with. So he gets really stressed out because Aragorn knows that this stone is a dragon. Mm-hmm. No one else knows the stone is a dragon, but these strangers might.
Yeah, they very likely know
that. Yes, they very likely do know that the stone is a dragon. And he tells Roran, I gotta go. I'm leaving. Bye. So Roran's about to be gone, and Aragorn's been kind of making a big deal about it all this time, and then all of a sudden, when it's time for Roran to leave, Aragorn's just like, bye, I gotta go.
Yeah, and it's Horst that pulls him aside, right, and mm-hmm. tells him that strangers have been looking for a stone, and you mm-hmm. need to get home to your house as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. And he overhears Sloane giving away
the information.
Yeah.
About the- so he runs home. Mm-hmm. He's worried about it. He is communicating with Saphira,
right.
and he tells her that there's strangers in town looking for the stone, and before he even gets to speak with Garrow, his uncle, about it, Saphira swoops him up and flies off.
She's angry.
She is so angry, and she's anxious, and mm-hmm. her mind is running, and we really get to see that. She just has murder on she has murder on her mind.
Yeah, she's screaming murderer and mm-hmm. blasphemer and calling all kinds of names mm-hmm. to these people. And it's really interesting because, like, I wonder how she would know any mm-hmm. details about these two strangers.
Yes, but she is obviously upset. And so she flies and flies and flies and flies. Mm-hmm. And they over go the spine. Off in the spine and land. And Aragorn wants to get back because he's worried about Garrow, but they can't fly now mm-hmm. because now Aragorn's legs have the skin has been rubbed off and yeah. worn off.
So they land in the spine, right? Mm-hmm. They land. Interesting. They actually land at the spot where Aragorn originally
they
found
do.
The egg.
They do.
Which is so interesting, and I didn't quite understand how Saphira would know
where Aragorn that is. Didn't know that either, and he questioned that, how mm-hmm. Saphira would know.
Yeah, so she lands here in this clearing, and his legs are all torn up, and they now cannot fly back.
Yes, and he's freaking out on Saphira. He is not happy with her. He no. says, you have to build me a shelter. You need to clear the snow. Like, talking right. to her.
He's very angry.
And she's like, nope, my belly's warm because I have fire inside of me, and I'll put my wing over you for shelter. So they end up going to sleep. The next morning, he wakes up and he's like, you gotta fly fast. We gotta get home. We gotta get back to Garrow. And
is this, I believe this is when she swoops him up, it's actually his first time to really ride her. Right?
It is. It is the very first time. And I think it was definitely a shock that his legs got rubbed off. And he literally can't walk. He can't move. He can't do anything. Right. He is in serious pain.
I mean, her scales are obviously, like very rough and mm-hmm. sharp. And they fly for hours. Mm-hmm. Like, it takes hours for them to get to wherever they ended up in the spine. So
he tells her, you know, we've got to get back fast. We got to mm-hmm. get home. They get home. And the house is destroyed. It's been burnt or had yeah. an explosion or some kind of major destruction. And And Aragorn's freaking out, and Saphira says, like, maybe it's not all lost hope. Like, we need to look for Garrow. Mm-hmm. So they go, and they're searching, and they do find him underneath the rubble of all of this.
Yeah, they find just his shoulder and arm sticking out at first. Mm-hmm. And they have to clear the rubble. It's kind of a gruesome moment.
It is. And in his hand is the leather of one of the men, they believe.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He has some fabric in his hand.
Yes, some fabric.
And so Saphira and Aragorn...
Clear him out.
They clear him out, and Aragorn says that they need to fly because they need to get to the medic quickly. Mm-hmm. Or the healer.
Yes.
But Saphira is still, even though she's large, she's not a full-grown dragon.
Right.
Can't fly both of them. Mm-hmm. And Aragorn's legs are all torn up. So he's questioning if she can fly both of them. She says she can. Mm-hmm. So she grabs Garrow and is going to kind of hoist him under with some leather.
Right.
And so kind of balance him underneath her.
Yeah. So they make like a makeshift... So they kind of make a makeshift gurney out of wood. And use leather straps to tie the gurney to Saphira's legs, I believe. And then they strap in Garrow.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Garrow. He's unconscious and all burnt. He has, like, giant burns on his sides. And so the plan is for Saphira to carry Garrow underneath her and to have Aragorn ride her to Carvajal.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like we mentioned, a 10-mile journey.
A 10-mile mm-hmm. journey. So they get... somewhat down the road, but mm-hmm. Saphira just can't do it. And they're also nervous about her being seen in town,
mm-hmm.
but she is just not strong enough. And so they end up landing, and Aragorn has to pull his uncle all the way into town. A grown man, while his legs are torn up like this.
Mm-hmm.
He makes it quite some way, but again end up fainting. And Brom is running out along the road and actually meets them.
Right.
And gets them to the medic.
Gertrude, the town healer.
And Aragorn is unconscious for 3 or 4 days.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He wakes up. He's in Gertrude's house. And he asks about his uncle. His uncle's not doing well. The fever's not broke. He goes over to their house after Gertrude forces some food down him. Because mm-hmm. he's not eaten in 4 days.
Yeah.
5 days. I don't know, because he hadn't eaten before he flew off.
Right.
He gets over to his uncle. His uncle's not doing well. Horst is there. Katrina's there. And they're kind of speaking. So Horst kind of asks some questions to Aragorn, like, what happened?
Right. He mentions that Horst himself had been to the house and mm-hmm. seen the destruction.
And he had seen the destruction, saw footprints as well as a giant marking.
Giant clawed footprints. He saw Saphira's footprints, and he has no clue what kind of creature made these footprints.
Mm-hmm.
Dragons are not common, right?
No, they're not. But it's just shocking. They don't know what's made these footprints, but mm-hmm. something big has happened. And that is what I believe the villagers have in their mind is what happened. Some giant creatures come in and destroyed the land
mm-hmm.
and destroyed the house. And they also wonder why Aragorn's not as beat up as Garrow was.
Right.
And Aragorn says he was out during mm-hmm. the incident and came back and found him. He says it was the strangers.
Right.
Through all of this, to have all of this conversation, Aragorn decides to go to sleep at Horst's house.
Yes, he sleeps at Horst's house down the hallway from Garrow, I believe.
Down the hallway from Garrow. And
he's not doing well at all.
He's not doing well. And unfortunately, we do find out that Garrow does pass away in the night, which was a very sad moment. Aragorn was extremely torn up about this. He was praying to the gods and questioning why it happened. He's mad at Saphira. He's mad at himself. He's just really torn up about the situation. So upset.
I was upset too, reading this. Mm-hmm. I feel like there were so many ways that this could have turned out differently. Like, if Saphira had not swooped him up
mm-hmm.
and carried him off that night, then maybe he could have warned Garrow and they could have left. But Saphira made the point that if she didn't take him, then Aragorn could have died too.
And Saphira as well, more than likely.
Right, yeah.
So because they would have all.
These strangers were obviously looking for either a dragon egg or a dragon. So
mm-hmm.
it would have, and if they did that to the house, I mean, the house was destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's just two people, I mean, obviously they had to use magic to do whatever they did to this house.
Yes, and so Garrow passes away. They decide mm-hmm. to send a messenger to tell Rorin, because Rorin has just left.
Right.
The day before.
Mm-hmm. Two days before. Mm-hmm.
2 days before the incident. So about a week later, Garrow has passed away. So they send a messenger off. Aragorn is up through the night and finally gets to communicate with Saphira again. They've not been in communication because Aragorn has been unconscious, mm-hmm. and then Saphira's probably far off hiding.
Right, she's trying to focus on not getting discovered by the townsfolk of Carval.
Mm-hmm. And so they finally get in communication, and she's like, we gotta go. We have to get out of here. Mm-hmm. They know about me. They're gonna find out. It's not safe for us to stay. And Aragorn is questioning at first, but then hears Horse and Katrina talking, and he can hear that there's some doubt in Horst's
right.
conversation.
Horst doesn't believe the honestly quite unreasonable story that that Aragorn gives. Mm-hmm. It smells fishy when he's giving his excuses. Like, as the reader, you kind of are like, I don't know how many people are gonna just believe that you were just gone at that time and that you had no idea what happened when you came back. It was all very suspicious.
And, yes, it
and
was.
And Horst is intelligent. He understands that Aragorn's probably not telling everything that he knows. And this worries Aragorn.
It does. And it kind of turns his mourning into anger. And he's upset mm-hmm. about the situation and decides that he's just kind of over it and angry and that he does need to leave. So he breaks out, kind of slides out the window mm-hmm. of Horst's house.
Sneaks out.
Goes to Sloane's. Steals meat from Sloane, of course.
He also steals some leather from someone.
He does. He steals some leather hides mm-hmm. And is heading out of town. And he's going to use this leather as, like, a saddle for right. Saphira because of his legs.
Yes. He's learned that if he's going to ride Saphira, he definitely needs a saddle.
And he is heading out of town, and Brom stops him.
Yeah,
he gets... And takes everything.
Yeah, Brom kind of ambushes him.
Mm-hmm. And takes all of his things, and we also find out Brom has talked to Saphira, and he tells Saphira that she needs to wait until they come to a resolution. So,
which is crazy, mm-hmm. that Brom
can
talking to the dragon. Mm-hmm. That was kind of shocking.
It was. Brom tells him he's going with him. He's coming.
Yeah, Brom basically lets it, you know, he lets it slip that he could tell from the questions that he was asking to the strangers looking for a stone in town. He kind of deduced.
And then Aragorn. He saw the mark on his palm.
He did. Mm-hmm. At a prior time, he saw the mark that was given to Aragorn when he initially touched the dragon mm-hmm. and his hand was...
Which comes when anyone touches a dragon hatchling, mm-hmm. we find out. But still not why that happens.
No, I later it describes that the dragon chooses. I think mm-hmm. one of the last things in our reading was that a dragon chooses its mm-hmm. its rider. And so it's possible that Saphira chose Aragorn, and then when he first touched her because he was the chosen one, perhaps that establishes their bond, their mm-hmm. link somehow. Still not exactly sure. It's not very clear what the purpose of that was.
And Brom says he's coming. Aragorn thinks in his mind, okay, he can come, but we're going to ditch him. Like, he's not planning for Brom to go on this full mm-hmm. journey. And the journey that they've decided to go on, I kind of forgot to mention, was to go avenge Garrow's death in this situation. They're going to hunt down these two strangers and kill them.
And Brom explains to Aragorn that these... So Brom's the storyteller, right? Mm-hmm. So he knows all the lore behind the dragons. He knows all the history. Brom explains that these two strangers are not just... they're not humans. They're not men. They are called the Razak, I believe. I don't know how you pronounced it when reading, but Razak is kind of how I said that word. But they are like bird creatures. They have beaks and they hunch over and they're apparently magical, and their sole purpose is to hunt down dragons for the king, for King Galbatorix. So anytime a rumor of a dragon comes up in the kingdom, apparently these two are dispatched mm-hmm. to hunt the dragon down and to force the dragon and any rider to basically join or die.
Yeah, and so what really happens next is they start on this massive journey
mm-hmm.
and they sleep overnight.
Mm-hmm.
They make the saddles.
Yes.
Or a saddle.
Brom actually knows how to make a saddle for a dragon. Because he studied these things.
Mm-hmm. And they get going the next day. we get to see a little more of Braum and some communication between him and Aragorn and find out a little bit about him, that he's not been a storyteller for his whole life.
No, he just moved to Carvajal 15 years ago, and when Aragorn asks him what he did before that, Braum refuses to answer. Braum says that, you know, in due time you'll know, but he doesn't want to give away what he's done before. So
he is very secretive about it.
He's a very mysterious character.
And they are traveling. Braum says it's not a good idea to ride Saphira the whole way. They go through a town. We meet like a, I don't remember what kind of creature it is. Some kind of like troll on the bridge situation.
And he demands coins from them. And I was really surprised that Braum just kind of handed over the money.
Except that he is planning to pickpocket him.
Exactly.
And so he takes all of his money. They go into another town. They buy horses.
Yep, Farrensford.
They buy these beautiful horses. There's a man that says he doesn't want to sell his horse because he loves it, but there's always the right price for things.
Yeah, Braum whips out this money. Like, he's
like 400 coins or something like
which
that.
Which is supposed to be a huge amount in this world. He basically asks the man, you know, this is your prized horse that you don't want to sell. How much money would it take? And when he gives a number, Braum just pulls out the money. Yeah, it was a really a crazy moment.
And we also find out the strangers had been through this town. I believe the same town, and they've also bought horses.
Yes.
And we kind of end up at this massive field, these plains.
Right, so Aragorn and Braum are riding after the, the two Razak strangers, right? And they ride south towards Utgard, which is the mountain where King Galbatorix slayed Vrail, in the story that Braum told. And they round the mountains, and Aragorn has never seen past this point before. His whole life has been in the Spine or in this Palancar Valley between Carvajal and Farrensford. And so when they finally make their way around the mountain, there's this massive plain, this huge plains. And I believe the last things that that Braum tells Aragorn are that, one, there's a cool tower on the mountain that they notice, and it's a place where dragon riders kept watch before, and now it's called the Place of Sorrow because of what happened with Vrail. And then the massive plains are just huge. I think he says that it would take up to 14 days to ride across the plains, and that other than some nomads wandering, there's really no life here. So it seems like it's going to be...
He asks Saphira, like, what the plains look like, because Saphira can fly up above them as well. So
she's circling, and she's looking around. What does she say? I think she says that it's nothing but rabbits and, like, brush.
Oh, yes.
And that's it. Yeah. And I'm wondering, like, you know, how hard is it going to be to track two strangers just by their footprints and their tracks across this plane? This seems like this is going to be quite the task.
It does.
And this is where we're kind of left off at the end of
this is where we end.
At our reading.
So what have you thought of the pacing so far of the book?
So I thought that it started a little slow just because it was kind of building up the setting, which is very typical for a fantasy book. I would say that the pace of the world building was actually much quicker than I'm used to, especially if you read, you know, larger titles like The Lord of the Rings and whatnot. They can take a very long time to build up the setting. So although it started slow, I didn't feel like it was too slow. And then suddenly, as soon as the dragon hatches, the pace shifts and it picks up. But I wouldn't describe it as a fast pace at all.
I agree. I would say the first couple chapters, I was not here for it. And then when we get to Braum telling the story of Galbatorix, that's when I really kind of got interested, and I would say the pacing picked up a little bit, but it's still not the fastest paced book, and I'm worried that this next section that we're going to read is going to be slow paced because we're going through these plains, and I think that's really what we're going to be focused on.
Yeah, and this is kind of a typical process in high fantasy books. A huge part of a high fantasy book series is introducing the reader to the different parts of the world. So there's a lot of descriptions. There's a lot of little details that are mentioned almost in every other paragraph.
I know, there's so many details, and I feel like we've been talking a lot of the summary so far, and there's still things I've not mentioned. Like, one thing that comes to mind is Aragorn's name. Like, Braum talks about Aragorn's name being an elf.
Yes, Aragorn was an was actually the first Dragon Rider. He was the first elf to be chosen by a dragon hatchling.
So it's just crazy. I don't know. There's so many details.
Right. That we about. Really are. Even I don't know how long we've been talking. I feel like we've given so much, but we're just barely scratching the surface. The lore. If you are really into fantasy book series, the amount of detail and world building that Christopher Paolini has generated in just the first quarter of this book mm-hmm. is really phenomenal. The stage has been set.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a fantasy reader, am already captivated by his world. We've really only been able to look at one small corner, and I'm really excited for this journey
mm-hmm.
To see the rest of Algazia and what it looks like.
So are there any characters that you are really loving right now?
I'm actually pretty happy with Brom's character.
I think I like Brom too.
He's very funny. Mm-hmm. He's quirky. One interesting quirk is that he randomly throws a stick at Aragorn and forces him to sword fight.
Yes, and like literally beats him blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he
and Aragorn, like I mentioned before, like being just this kind of like arrogant 15-16 year old.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't want to fight Brom. I'm gonna beat him and. No, that's not what happens.
He gets whooped, essentially.
Brom is also super snarky. Mm-hmm. Like, there are definitely some comments that he throws out that are just, they're funny.
Savage, as the young folk would call it.
Yes, savage. But it makes you, like, kind of not want to like his character. But I think mm-hmm. that's the point, because I think Brom is going to end up just being a great character.
Well, and I feel like I must be old now, because I kind of see what Brom's doing. Brom understands that Aragorn is essentially, he's a teenager, he's coming into adulthood. He is very confident in himself, and there are times when, you know, he probably should be more humble, and I feel like Brom is trying to instill that in him.
Yeah.
But Brom has a lot more to give. Brom's history before he came to Carvajal is an unknown, and I'm super intrigued in what his history is going to be. I think Brom is my favorite character so far. One, because he is playing the trope of the mentor
mm-hmm.
In these, you know, fantasy series. You do typically have a mentor that guides the protagonist, right? And he's kind of fulfilling that role in kind of an interesting off-the-cuff way. But I think that we're going to learn a lot more about him in the future, and I have my suspicions.
You do? Mm-hmm. Does this remind you of anything so far? Like, this book, does it remind you of any other stories, movies?
Yeah, so when you talk about the setting,
mm-hmm.
It feels like The Lord of the Rings.
I am thinking that, too, and I've not even read The Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So
what a good reader of me. But as I'm reading it in this journey that they're going on, all I can think of is Lord of the Rings.
So the things like he describes very often, the sky,
mm-hmm.
the sunset, the sun rising, the weather at the time, the things that he sees around him, that's very Tolkien-ish. And what I'm interested in seeing if the book follows along the same pattern of the heroes journeying along the road to a plot
mm-hmm.
and having basically these subplots where you have a rising action and a climax and a falling action all in one little contained moment again and again and again throughout the story. That's what happens in The Lord of the Rings, and I feel like it's setting this up to be a similar.
This is a four-book series.
This is.
And they get massive.
Yeah, this is already a 500-page book, mm-hmm. and I believe it's the smallest of the four books.
I think so, too. And so I wonder if we're going to come to an actual resolution. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I agree that it reminds me of Lord of the Rings. I'm going to assume it reminds me of Game of Thrones because mm-hmm. of the dragons. But
definitely.
I am not a high fantasy reader, so I can't pull too much and tell too much of what it reminds me of.
Right. It's the writing style. It's to me, that makes it feel like Tolkien. It feels like a young adult version of Tolkien. But the story itself is not like Lord of the Rings. The dragon focus, that does make me think it's kind of Game of Thrones. I don't really know any other stories where the dragon's a good character with the protagonist. What other story can you think of where the dragon is on the good side?
I know nothing of dragons. I am so unfamiliar with the dragon
mm-hmm.
realm. I don't know anything about them. I don't know if I've read a single book about a dragon before.
Well, you know, they're always hyper intelligent beings,
mm-hmm.
but they're typically greedy in traditionally. Dragons are evil and they're greedy.
I can't think of one dragon.
Is it How to Train Your Dragon?
No, Shrek.
Shrek.
Which the dragon does collect all of the treasure in there. Yes. And is guarding the tower, but then the dragon does end up being a good... And it's also a girl.
It is a girl in Shrek. That's
Fun
right.
Fun fact, we almost picked Game of Thrones for this podcast this month.
To find a book that we could agree on.
Yeah, I had to go in high fantasy realm. Well, fantasy realm. And then Christian pretty much to compromise had to come down to YA because that's my go-to genre. So that's how we ended up here.
Which I'm really happy about. I've had these books on my TBR literally since high school. I just, you know, have never found the perfect time to get started. So I'm loving it so far.
So in the first, we've read about 123 pages so far. What has been your OMG moment? The moment that your jaw just kind of dropped.
When Garrow died, I kind of...
That was shocking to me.
I kind of thought that he would make it through. I kind of thought they were building it up so that he could live and, you know, his death.
I think he had to, I don't know, and if I'm thinking from the author's point of view, I'm thinking Garrow needed to die so Aragorn could go on this journey. Because otherwise, his uncle would want him to stay home. He would need to take care of his uncle.
Right.
And the plot just couldn't move forward. But I was shocked that he died.
Yeah. So, either that or maybe... Okay. So, I think my OMG moment really will be Braum ambushing them before they leave. Braum stopping Aragorn from leaving. You realizing that Braum... knows, and you kind of had, you know, obviously you had clues before that he knew what was going on, but the fact that he stopped them and decided, hey, I'm coming with you, you're not leaving without me, that was a kind of a shocking moment.
I think one of my OMG moments is that these two strangers hunt down this random kid with a stone. I think these magical creatures in this massive, it seems, universe knew about him and had an interest in him. And then the king having this dark backstory, and I feel like it sets up a lot for what's going to come in the future.
And there's so much we haven't even talked about, like the Varden, the group of rebels that are attacking at the edge of the Empire.
Yeah, there literally is so much going on. But
the political discourse in the town during the fair, where people are arguing politics over whether the king is there to help them or to suppress them.
So, yeah, I think that's my biggest shock, is just this random kid in this massive universe has two men hunting him down, and how they found out, and all of that. So, yeah. Do you have any key quotes or anything that really has stood out with you so far?
Stood out
to you so far?
There was a really cool quote by Saphira when you kind of learn that she is sentient, when you realize that she's, you know, able to really express herself like a human would. She hunts an eagle, and she lets the eagle go. And she has this cool quote, and I'm probably going to mess it up, but it's something along the lines of that a hunter should not die pinned down, and that it would be better for the hunter to die in the chase rather than, or as the hunter rather than the prey. So being essentially a large bird of prey herself, she lets the eagle go.
She really has, like, not only just personality but morals, and it's just really neat to see her character.
Garrow's final monologue, both to Rohan and to Aragorn.
That was my key quote for this.
Oh, did I steal it from you? Okay, I'll let you have the floor.
I'm not going to, like, really go into a lot of detail, but just all of the wisdom that he kind of pours into the two of them.
In two paragraphs, really.
Yeah, and he just has all of these just wise words that he's pouring into these men, and just, I don't know, he just has a lot of wisdom, and it is sad that we don't get to continue to see who he is and who he, more details of what kind of man that he was.
Right, they were really his last words.
It really was, especially to Rohan, most definitely the last words to Rohan, but it was just really nice and really lets you know, like, he has a lot of character and a lot of morals and has poured into them.
I'm really sad that Garrow won't be a part of this moving forward.
I think overall that is pretty much all that we have to discuss for this week. Do you have any predictions that you would like to speak about?
Predictions for the next week specifically, or for the rest of the
book? I guess just kind of going in, because we won't know what's going to happen in the next week.
I think that Braum not only knows about Aragorn's heritage, I think that Braum was somehow involved with the Empire, and I'm not exactly sure how he would have been, but he knows so much, he's so interested, and he shows up in Carver Hall at the same time that Aragorn's born. That's in a book like this, that's not a coincidence, yeah. Right? That's everything.
Most definitely, and that's such a small detail that is something that a lot of people might miss, kind of skip over, or might mm-hmm. be one of those plot twists that we get to see in the end.
Yeah. So So here's one thing that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm questioning, I could be wrong, because this is a YA book, and YA books tend to be straightforward a lot of times, but I'm questioning whether the view of King Galbatorix as evil is actually true or not.
He might actually be a good guy.
Right. So I don't have a lot to base this off of, other than the idea that this town historically dislikes the Empire, mm-hmm. right? And all the information we get about the king has come from Braum so far.
Mm-hmm.
So what if Braum is the one with foul intentions?
Okay, so here's my prediction. I think Horst is the bad guy.
You think Horst is the bad guy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how?
Okay. I don't know. I just have my... I don't know. I don't know how to break it down. Just my suspicions. I don't think Horst is the good guy. I think that we've set him up quickly as the good guy. But
too quickly?
Mm-hmm, I don't know that Horst is all in it for all of the good. Why was he so willing to help? Is he really a good guy? Mm-hmm. Is that just how he is? Or were there some other intentions kind of mixed mm-hmm. in there? So and obviously he's curious, and he's doubtful of Aragorn, and he's kind of done his own research and come to his own conclusions mm-hmm. with what's going on.
And he's very close with Aragorn. He invites their family to dinner mm-hmm. during the fair and whatnot, and he's really got he's got a close eye. I really didn't pay attention to how close of an eye he has on Aragorn.
Yeah, so that is my kind of little guess. And if you've read the book, you'll know. But we're just on week one, so that's
we have no idea.
That's kind of it. And I think that's kind of a good note to lead off on what we think so we can find out if we are horribly mistaken or if some of our beliefs come true. So, yeah. Okay, that is it for this week's episode of the Judge a Book podcast. For next week, Christian's going to be back with me and we're discussing the week 2's reading, which ends on page 250 in my book, but that is the start of Trail of Oil. So, we will see you guys next week. We'll be back on Monday, and we'll chat about Aragorn again. See you then. That's it for today's episode of Judge a Book. If you enjoyed, please make sure to give us a 5-star review before you go. Connect with me on social media. They're all linked in the pod description. And don't forget, next Monday, a new episode of Book Club will be released, and we can once again judge a book.